Welcome to the number one podcast for home design pros and cabinet specialists. Get ready to learn how to use a mix of psychology and technology unique to designing home living spaces. Jim Gurule is a thought leader and innovator that holds 3 U.S. patents and has spent decades working with some of California's top designers. He knows the ins and outs of what you need to do to capture your craft as a designer and is about to share everything he has learned with you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Andrew McCauley, and we have an exciting show for you today. Of course, I couldn't do it without Jim Gurule. Hello, Jim.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you today?
I am awesome. I'm looking forward to today's podcast. We have some special information today about some of the processes and the methods that we can use for our design business and our cabinet business. Jim, what do you think? What are we covering today?
Well, what I'd like to talk about this morning, Andrew, is what I refer to as the five-month, five-year unique decision-making process related to design and installed projects.
5 month, 5 years. Okay, I'm excited. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Well, again, as we talked about in some of the previous podcasts, the passion behind this and the reason for doing this was out of a frustration of looking for direction and looking for information that would help my designers that I work with and the dealerships that I'd work with, because I saw them struggling with not having enough business, or even worse sometimes, having the wrong kind of business, and how that would affect their business to the point where they were giving more away than they were bringing in, because they had the wrong customer, didn't value what they did. The customers were becoming very demanding, almost kind of nasty at a certain point, because they realized that they needed the designers needed them more than they needed them. And that was a big shift, because again, we went from this very high demand to this low supply, and it was just the opposite, and it's like the worst customers were left.
And you know, I think that's important that you say that. I don't think designers in your industry are alone. I've come across that in a number of industries where particularly people that are either starting out their own business or solopreneurs, where they just don't know when their next paycheck or the next customer is coming from. So they sort of cling on to anything that they can get. And in the end, as you said, it's worse for them, because those customers that they try and hold on to become their worst customers, demanding all their time and their energy, so that the person running the business just can't break away and go out and look for better clients or more important clients, because they're stuck getting their energy sucked from these particular customers. And it brings in that concept of, you know, sacking your clients. You know, we used to always think that only clients could sack your service provider, but now there's that whole notion of sacking clients that are not working for you. So, you know, I don't think people are alone listening to this podcast, that's for sure.
Well, it refers back to the mass versus the connector, because there was a time when the customer was always right. And there was a time when you did this mass advertising, and whoever walked in your door was the customer, and you did whatever you need to do to please them and serve them. And obviously that is still the right attitude as far as taking care of your customers. But the consumer has somewhat abused that and taken advantage of that.
Haven't they?
And you know, again, it's not their fault or the designer's fault. It's really our industry for not taking a better look and of what the value is, and it's often because they don't have the opportunity to really appreciate the value of the designer. They naturally extrapolate from other purchases. If they were at Nordstrom's, for example, they take that same decision-making process that they use to purchase a suit or a dress or something at Nordstrom's, and they expect the designer to serve them in that manner. And you know, I don't believe in that. I mean, I believe in the customer. You take care of your customers, but it has to be the right customer. It has to be a Nordstrom's customer. If you're going to provide a Nordstrom service, you can't have that the attitude of the consumer today is that I want to pay Walmart prices, but I want Nordstrom service. And I find a lot of designers that were being taken advantage of. And although, as I referred to, I also have a couple designers that really took a different approach to this. And as a result, they created this line out the door, this waiting room of Nordstrom customers that value what they do. And there's somewhat of an expectation is created with this scarcity where it was fascinating to me that these customers would wait in a waiting room for months before they were they had access to the designer. And naturally what happens when they finally get access to that designer, the designer's in a much stronger position to charge what services they need to charge for appropriately. They can pick and choose who they want to do business with.
I think you hit it, on the head. It's having the right customers. Customer service is extremely important. Couldn't agree with you more. But you want to make sure you've got the right customers to be servicing them properly. And I think, and as I said, it's not just designers. It's anyone with a service industry that has customers that think that they get Walmart prices, as you said, for Nordstrom-style service. It's just wrong.
Right. Well, something you said, too, is, that, again, they're talking about tangible products versus services. And the services, that's intellectual property. That, you know, that's really not a commodity. And we'll talk more about that later. But that has a lot to do with the five-month, five-year decision-making process unique to home design. So let's just use an example right now for a kitchen remodel. And again, this is over 20 years of observing different dealerships and designers. I've come to the conclusion, and it's been really reinforced by the workshops that we've done, and that is that if somebody happens to walk into a showroom right off the street, doesn't happen that much anymore like it did, like it used to. But if they happen to walk into a showroom and we're ready to buy a kitchen at that very moment, on average, the soonest they would have a functioning kitchen with running water and working appliances would be 5 months. And that's because it would take a design process, minimum week, 2 weeks. It would may require some permits. You have to hire a contractor. There's a lot that goes into it. By the time you order the cabinets and do all the construction, on average, it's about 5 months, but they have a functioning kitchen. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do it in 5 weeks. That can be done, and it doesn't mean it couldn't take 5 years, and I've seen that. So,
but the average is
the average
about,
is about 5 months. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And however, on average, it takes up to 5 years. And this is where
you mean in reality it takes up to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. And this here's the best example of that is that people go through different stages in their life. And the one question that we begin to ask the homeowners when we'd see them, because as a repping agency, we rarely would see the homeowners unless there was a problem, unfortunately. But in many cases, it was resolved, and I would just ask the customer in passing, say, "Hey, really appreciate your business and the confidence you placed in, of course, the designer and the manufacturer. Enjoy your kitchen for many, many years." And then I'd say, "Hey, do you mind if I ask you a question?" And I said, "Sure. How long have you been considering remodeling your kitchen?" And again, 9 times out of 10, they'll say, "Well, quite honestly, I was thinking about it 10 years ago or 15 years ago when we bought the house." Or
right.
I had one client say, "I've been thinking about it ever since I moved into my apartment 30 years ago." Because everybody to some degree, or not everybody, but homeowners want a new kitchen. So in that case, it goes back even further. But on average, it's 5 years because maybe their neighbor had their kitchen remodeled, or maybe the kids finally are out of the house and they're empty nesters and they want to really reconfigure their living space that fits their lifestyle. And that process, on average, is about 5 years.
So what you're saying then is really the 5 months that it takes to build and design that kitchen space or whatever space it is, from start to finish, is actually really the final last 10% of the entire process, because there's been a lot of lead up, toing and froing, and people talking in their heads and saying, do I want this design? Do I want this kitchen remodeled? Do I need to speak to my neighbors? Should I talk to my family? Get feedback. So you're saying that's the final straw, and it's almost like an iceberg, right? It's the top few percent above the water, and the decision making process, the entire process is happening underwater. It's been going on for a long time.
Yes, and it's also not uncommon for a designer to work with somebody. Maybe they do a conceptual design, they do some design, and then they just disappear for a year, and then out of nowhere they resurface and they're ready to buy now. That happens a lot. It also explains why they'll work with the client for a year, a year and a half, and then when they're ready to do the project. I've even seen just recently where they received a deposit check for the cabinetry. They've paid the design fees. Everything's ready to go. And then in the 11th hour, they lose the job to another supplier or another manufacturer because for whatever reason, even though they've been planning, they lost trust in the process or the designer. Something went wrong, and then they give it to somebody else. So it's like you said, they're you don't have to wait the entire 5 years, but there's certain points when they're ready to buy, ready to make a decision. But here's really the most important thing to understand about the five-month, five-year decision-making process unique to our business, and that is that the designers that have done really well that I've seen that have created this line out the door and this demand for their services don't sell them the whole package or don't offer the package as a $100,000 project. They offer either a design consultation, a design service, an audit. I think that's a really underused way to go into somebody's home and do an audit of their space. And they break it down into a really bite-sized piece that doesn't have a lot of expectations attached to it.
Right.
And what that does is that allows that prospective client to become more comfortable with them. And it's back to the fundamentals. You know, it's the who, know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. So often the biggest mistake is they try to offer too big of a meal when they're, we just need to get through the appetizers.
And it's
also very much like dating. You want to spend some time, talk to them, get to know them, have some values before you ask them to go to bed. I mean, let's just face it, that every human being wants to be to make sure that they're not going to be taken advantage of.
Yes. So then what's happened over the last couple of years then? What's been the change in this 5 month, 5 year process? Has there been a significant change about how designers can interact with people quicker?
Well, yeah, the biggest change I think really again is the designers that have figured it out are doing really well. They've repositioned themselves and reframed their services to have a lot of value in the process that you go through,
mm-hmm.
And they get paid for their time in advance. So that's really important because when somebody pays for your services in advance, they value them more. That's just the way it is. It's human psychology. But if they don't pay for it, then they don't value it. And the best example I think of that in the kitchen business is I've referred to this before too, and that is if they walk into Home Depot and they give a designer there $75, I think is what Home Depot charges just to go out and do a field measure. The Home Depot is actually doing a better job than some of these independent designers because at least they put a $75 value on that service.
Right.
Now most of the designers I work with would not do that for $75, or some of them that are just as talented do it for free in the hopes that they'll win them over. And that's the difference I've seen, Andrew, is that consumer really taking advantage of that designer extracting as much free information as they can out of them, and then not having really the courtesy to communicate with them afterwards.
Yeah.
Or
I think that's a great I think that's a great example that you've used there. Putting a dollar value on a service like that, it commits people to being serious. I know in the seminar industry, for instance, you can hold free seminars, and let's say 1,000 people say they're going to turn up to your seminar for free. You'll be lucky to have 200 people there. That's what the going rate is. That's how the drop-off rate is, because it's free and there's no commitment, there's no skin in the game for them, for the people to turn up. But if you put a price on that seminar, even if it's $27 or $97, right, they've actually put something valuable and tangible into the process so that they do turn up. And the turn-up rate goes up to at least 50 to 60% because people don't want to lose that money that they've put into, invested in themselves, even if it's a low amount. But the upside to that, Jim, which is really fascinating, and this can happen a lot, and this can happen in the design industry as well, is that once you've known that that person is a buyer, meaning they've actually put their hand in their pocket to spend some money to do something, then we know that the buying rate at that particular seminar is going to go up as well, because we know that they're actually people who are interested in buying stuff further.
I love the psychology on this, and this is really where I get excited about, you know, the mass versus the connector, because, you know, because of the technology, you can connect with these potential clients much easier. And like you said, there's the seminar business. We used to do what we call product training, or we'd have informational webinars and things like that, or seminars. But a lot of this can be done through a webinar.
Yes.
And even automated to the point where it just happens automatically. Mm-hmm. But it's a great qualifier. It's also, you know, respecting that decision-making process of 5 months, 5 years. Uh-huh. They're not always ready to buy or make a decision right now. Mm-hmm. Really what you want to do is create that virtual waiting room, because if we just use your example of the seminar, you know, you want to create a demand, you know, a line out the door where they've raised their head and said, hey, I like what I see. And then they come in, you give them something of value, they come in and they wait for your services. That is the best way to really qualify them. And the mistake you asked me before, how much has changed, the designers that try to do that manually, and I use the word manually as face-to-face, mm-hmm. Really are the ones that are being taken advantage of. They really get struggled because consumers these days really don't want the face-to-face early on.
That's right. They want information then and there as soon as they're thinking about it. It may be 10 o'clock at night while they're watching TV or they're talking right to their partner or their spouse, and they do a bit of a search on the internet and they're looking for someone who's got some information for them at that time of night. And right, you certainly probably don't want your phone ringing at 10 or 11 at night or whatever, but you're happy for them to look at something that's available to them, which is generally online.
Right. Again, back to the who, know, like, and trust, yep, right? They just want to get to know who you are. If they like you enough based on information that you've provided to them, then they'll make the next move. And this is where, you know, again, when we talk about the power of the business that we're in, and the technology that you're familiar with, it's really what is developed this unique method. But it is also not as easy as it sounds. I get frustrated when I hear canned boilerplate programs that say this fits right into your business, and they don't understand this 5 month, 5 year, because it doesn't fit into every business, particularly when you get into commodity products or tangible products.
Yeah.
But what the internet allows us to do is really capture that. And then when we get into the method that I developed, the six senses method, it really is capturing that story in a way that can be delivered in just the way that consumers want to consume information. But there is it's not as easy as it sounds. And you know, you hear a lot about content creation. You hear a lot about you got to get your stuff out on the internet. But if it's not gathered properly and assembled in a way that they can digest it, then it really is almost an effortless process. And that really comes down to the end is they want a story.
Yep.
They want real stories that are that they can relate to in their neighborhood, or they can relate to in their community, something of relevance within that has a direct impact on their life, unlike something that's national. Again, this is back to the mass advertising versus connecting on a local level.
Okay. So 5 months and 5 years, is there that's a pretty good summary. I learned a lot just from that little summary. It's quite intriguing how that process has developed, and it's good that you've been able to step back and see what the greater picture is, particularly by just and you know, that's something that we haven't even touched on really, is just asking your clients, when did that process begin? And because you were asking that, it's enabled you to have a look at, well, this really does take just more than 5 months. And as you said, there's a lot more ways now to start connecting with people earlier in the piece. And sometimes you'll be connecting with them without you even knowing now, because you've been able to offer them some sort of information product, as you suggested, or some sort of vision of what they currently provide, so that people can start making that decision before they may even jump on the phone in the first place.
Yeah, and again, the 11th hour project that was lost. They worked with somebody for a year and a half, and in the 11th hour they went away. Often that is because somebody else repackaged exactly what they were going to do mm-hmm. for them mm-hmm. in a way that made it look easier, faster, with higher value.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with what that designer did. They didn't do anything wrong. All they really did wrong is they gave too much free advice and information in the hopes they'd earn it back. And unfortunately, that's not how consumers really operate
yeah.
or make decisions, totally. Final decisions with their money. So
what's if we're going to wrap this podcast up, Jim, what would be a good step for a designer listening to this now to take, do you think? What's one of the important key steps and elements that they should take away from this podcast?
Just to get real clear on really what the first step is. Make it look easy. Make it look fun. Make it look like not a huge task. Overcome the fear of the customer. Most people don't do large home improvement projects because of the fear of taking too long, mm-hmm. taking too much money, mm-hmm. and breaking it down into just a very easy first step and an easy action that they can not just have the customer determine whether they want to work with them, but I think even more important, have the designer determine whether they want to work with that particular client.
Yeah, yeah, almost. The designer needs to do an interview first, don't they?
Well, it really is a two-way interview. It's a filtering system for the designer not to take their intellectual property, their energy, their passion, and share it with somebody that doesn't value it. And again, you know, we'll talk about this more when we get into the method, but one of the things that we do is we take the A profile job folders and projects, but we also ask them to take an F, because I find often that the F is the one that drags their business down.
Yeah.
It takes them away from their A.
Yep.
They lose their enthusiasm about what they do, and they just get abused to the point where they either get out of the business or they start to take it out on their A-profile prospective clients.
Yeah, and I think in one of the upcoming podcasts, we'll talk about how to eliminate some of these Fs before you even know they've knocked on your door. So
yeah, I'm interested to hear about how we can do that with technology.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, and it's something that in my business we've been learning about. How do we eliminate those people before they even give us the first phone call?
Because
it's just saved so much time and hassle. So,
yeah.
All right, Jim, well, that's an awesome awesome wrap up. Thanks for sharing that knowledge again, and thanks for taking the time to discover that the length of time is quite a large distance, and how people can actually narrow that gap and you know, really work on that for their business.
Yeah.
Look forward to the next podcast. I'm not sure what we're talking about, but I'm sure it's going to be pretty interesting.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. Industry thought leader and innovator Jim Gurule has simplified the process of home space design in direct relation to psychology and technology of today and makes it accessible to design pros. Jim's signature B2B method was developed out of frustrations exclusively for designers, architects, remodelers, and cabinetry specialists. His Six Senses method helps designers identify and multiply their A-profile clients and helps create a virtual line out the door of people that value your unique design abilities. Find out more about Jim's methods and get free tips, resources, and show notes at sixsensesmethod.com. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you don't miss an episode, and leave a comment about the show too to let us know what you thought.